And welcome to episode 22 of Pennies in the Well. I am your host, Saturn, and holy crap, it's been fucking forever since I feel like I've done this. Yes, there was the ever so probably hopefully forgettable mini sort of sewed in January with the updates on how I was doing, but I'm pretty sure I was still under the influence of drugs at the point, and yeah, so I have a brain again, mostly usable brain. I'm probably at about 80%, though for the love of God, don't ask me to remember something that someone said like 5 minutes ago, because whew, gone. That's pretty much my state. So we're at episode 22. Thank you very much for downloading the show. I hope you enjoy. Welcome aboard for anybody who's new. And I've missed you guys. I mean, okay, sure. Through January, I didn't miss much of anything aside from pain-free existence. But aside from that, I've missed you. I've missed doing this. And wow, I'm at a year. Can you believe it? I've been doing this for over a year, kind of minus a month. But, you know, technically, it's been over a year. And I didn't do a lot of reflecting during this episode that I've been going through, which is a different kind of episode than we're currently in. And there should be some kind of silly pun in that, but did I mention my brain's not completely back yet? Anyhow, so there hasn't been a lot of reflecting because there hasn't been a lot of brain power, but I did do a little bit and kind of thinking back to what I was originally, not exactly planning, but the original factors that were part of the gestation of the concept of Pennies in the Well over this enforced break, yes, that there's a way to put it. And maybe spending a couple minutes kind of talking about that. What else are we going to do this episode? So a little bit of catch-up update briefly. The main segment of the show is going to be, what is it going to be? On transformative mysteries, because I was feeling a little inspired. Mind you, that was a couple weeks ago, so hopefully it will still come out at least mildly entertaining. And then at the end of the show, going to do the draw for the Fairy Magic book and a little bit of what people wrote in about for their contest entry. And that will probably wrap it up. It'll likely be a bit shorter than usual for a standard show because I'm not feeling really hugely chatty at the moment. Mind you, we know how that goes. And the fact is that I can ramble with the best of them. It's like a ramble in the jungle. Yeah, not a rumble in the jungle, a ramble in the jungle. But that's a digression. So, reflecting back to a year ago and the land of pennies. And part of what started this little mental exploration was I was thinking about the intro and other people's intros, and mostly just about this one, mind you. And, you know, how to invite you into the show with me. And sometimes I would think of it as, you know, inviting you, my fellow explorers, or that wasn't necessarily quite right, or my fellow, you know, journeymen, that doesn't quite work either. But what those come down to is the idea that I wanted when I started this podcast was to explore, to do a lot of personal exploration. So a lot of personal work, which slides into almost therapy or therapeutic techniques periodically. Personal exploration on the body kind of level. And then concept exploration in ways that were hopefully a little different. Possibly, I don't want to say, well, okay, deeper than 101s. I've never been particularly inclined to do 101 topics per se. I figure if you need the basics, I'm probably not the person to go to at this point. That all being said, some things are new, and hopefully I do approach them in a way that makes sense. But that was kind of the starting point I originally had, was wanting to do this deeper exploration, and that is why the symbolism of the well was so applicable and is so applicable. And in many ways, I think of the middle part of the show as us being in the well. And I've had a couple of shows where we've done the meditation as we go into it. And at that point, and the purpose is to get us thinking on that deeper level and going inside a little bit more. So a lot of self-awareness on the show, or at least these are the things that I'm going for. And so when I start an episode, and I usually do, basically the intro is could be considered a segment on what I've learned in life in the last, well, week, month, whatever. The reason that I do it, and I've probably said this before, but did I mention that I have a really shitty memory at this moment? I the drugs, the pain, oh my God, they fried my brain to hell and gone. Or Hades and gone. Or heaven and gone. Who knows? All I know is it went somewhere else and it didn't take me with it. And apparently I don't track as well anymore either, so I'm going to have to be really careful about my digressions, because coming back out of them is apparently much harder than it used to be. Hopefully that'll pass soon. So anyhow, when I do these discussions about what I've learned, kind of what's in the background there is I'm hoping to give ideas on how to view, how you can view your world, about how we can look at what we're going through at any given point and how we react to it. And from that, gain a deeper understanding of ourselves, what our issues are, where we could spend some time and effort on improving our state of being, I guess. So, wow, see, I'm much more efficient than I used to be. And let's go into then, what have I been learning in recent times? Well, the most obvious one is that no matter how much you think you've cut back on things in life, there's always more that you can cut back on. Because life forced me to cut back. Like, I've been going through something for a lot of, well, various things have happened, shall we say, over the last 2 years to encourage me to do less, to really focus on my priorities, to figure out what they are, and to cut away everything else, everything that isn't a priority, everything that isn't needed. And it is hard, because when you love to do things, or you want to be helpful, or you want to be involved, that list of things that you do can skyrocket dramatically. I lived a life there for a while that, you know, other people looked at and went, I can't believe you're doing all that, and you're doing more, and when do you sleep, and how do you get it done? And honestly, I have no idea how I got it done, because now I've stopped, and I can look back and go, holy crap, how the hell did I do that? But that's where I was, and letting anything go was exceedingly difficult. Exceedingly, like, stupidly hard. Because there was always that, but I want to do this, I want to do that. And while I had finally reconciled the concept of, okay, if you want to do anything more than you currently do, you have to drop something that you already have on your plate. So I'd reached the point of zero sum. So there was no, you could not have an addition without a subtraction. Everything had to come out at the same basic level as where it was. Like, that there was no more room in the inn. You could only put someone else into a room when someone else had left. And that worked sort of for a while, but the recent experience has taught me how completely, or maybe it's the clue by four from the universe finishing the lesson, that's always possible too, that, oh no, life can be taken down to a lot more simplified version of itself. I mean, it got to the point where all I could do comfortably, sort of, was lie flat on couch, possibly bed. I actually had to flip my mattress over for the bed to even be workable. That's it. That's all I had. Some days reading was too hard. Hell, there were days when TV watching was too hard. Couple months, of course, and I'm probably covered some of this in the short episode, and for which I am sorry, but I'm going to go there again. I had people doing my grocery shopping for me, like laundry for me. The only things that I did were I fed my cats, I cleaned their litter box when I couldn't con somebody else to do it, and I kept up a very minimal version of personal hygiene. So, you know, I'd wash my hair every 4 or 5 days when hair washing is 3 to 4 minutes of excruciating agony. You really do put it off as long as you can stand it. And face washing, teeth brushing, you'd be amazed how you're willing to let things kind of slip when it hurts to do something. Because even standing, of course, hurt. So my life got stripped down to really, really limited. I have a much greater empathy for anyone who suffers chronic pain, by the way. Because it nasty ass shit. I love that I have an explicit rating. I mean, I have it because I wanted to be able to talk about things like suicide and not have parents freak out. But being able to swear at random when I feel like it is kind of nice. Mind you, it gets me into a bad habit and I swear at work occasionally. But, you know, they appreciate me for the work that I do and not necessarily for the personality I have. Though, apparently they also miss my personality when I'm not there for 3 months, which is very sweet. So, it's not that I had to learn how to let things go. It was really simple. There was none of this angst over, oh my God, what am I not going to do? I didn't care. I absolutely did not care. So it took my life down to zip. There was no energy working. There was pretty much no ritual. I mean, I sat through a couple. No, that's a lie. I think I semi-sat through one and I lied on the floor through Yule because that was all I could do. And Imbolg was roughly the same kind of experience, though I think I was able to sit for a little bit by the end of January. Anyway, regardless. So magic got stripped out. Worship, aside from a little communion through the drug and pain haze, wasn't there. I went nowhere. I did nothing. Catching up on book reading, while lovely, is not actually normally on my list of things to do. So what is the point of all this? Well, I guess part of it is if you're feeling the need to get stuff cleared out of your life, do it now. Do it before the universe kicks you on your ass and you have to go through this type of experience to actually learn how to let shit go. I guess that's point number one. Point number two is just about the importance of striking that balance in your own life and really determining what's important and what's not. And we'll talk about that on another day, probably a couple of times, because it's such a great topic and different ways to approach it. So for today, I'm just going to do that as what I have what I have learned through my recent experiences. And is there anything else? Well, there's been a couple things, but, you know, I might have to save them up because there's not much still happening in my life. So when it comes to the next couple of episodes and, you know, the What I've Learned segment right here at the beginning, there's still probably not a heck of a lot for me to say. So, for a quick update on how I'm actually doing, the inflammation from the herniated disc is largely down. I still have numb toes and a numb side of my foot, and the side of my leg doesn't feel quite right, and there's some weakness in my leg. In other words, the nerves are still gibbled, and I'm still going to see a neurosurgeon in May. But the pain, oh, thank the various gods, especially my own, oh my gods, the pain is basically gone. Unless I'm really, really stupid about what I do. And I've learned not to be stupid and not to push things. I guess that's the next thing that I learned. Don't push the healing process. Because if you do, you bugger it up more. And you stay, you know, immobilized that much longer and in pain longer. So at this point, I don't push it. I do keep working it. That isn't to say that I remain lying on the couch. Largely because I think at this point, without the drugs or the pain, I would go out of my mind if I had to spend 24/7 lying on the couch. I didn't care under the influence of the drugs and the pain, but now that I'm not under their influence, I care. It gets boring. On the flip side, my maximum amount of oomph in a day is about 4 to 6 hours and not necessarily altogether. So recovery is a very slow process, and that's why it's taken me so long to get this podcast to you. Is once I started being able to get kind of up, out, and about, and sit and stand for some decent length of time, I started going back to work because, you know, they pay me And they're very good. They paid me even though I was off. But it's also my busiest season at work from January through mid-April. And I had to have a temp doing things, and that didn't go so well. And stress, stress. It's amazing when work can stress you even when you're not there. So once I was able to start spending a few hours there, I did. And it's about an hour drive for me to get there. So 2 hours commute, 2 hours there, and there you go. That's been my return to work has been about 6 hours a week of actual work. It's very sad. But well, that's where the energy went. Once I got kind of that under my belt and I could do a little bit more, well, that would be today. And here I am on March 16th, 2011, recording this podcast for you because I have missed you, well, more than I've missed work, quite honestly, but they pay me, so I had to go there first. Oh, and since it's March 16th, 2011, I thought I'd mention that I turned 40 yesterday. Woohoo! And what did I do for my 40th birthday? I stayed home. I worked from home to get some stuff done for the big ass deadline for tomorrow, and I cooked chili. And I had a glass of wine with chili for dinner. So there was my exciting 40th birthday. It was actually what I wanted. I just wanted calm, mellow. I wanted to feel accomplished. I got a little bit of writing done. I got the work that I had to get done done. I actually cooked a meal for the first time in 3 months that was more than steaming vegetables or throwing something into an oven that was already prepackaged or throwing it into a microwave that was also prepackaged. So that was kind of a big deal in my world. It was celebratory of my situation. And trust me, there was partying. My family did a nice do up with the most amazing food. Oh my God, my sister can cook. And I know there's no need for you to know this, but I'm gonna share anyways because if it inspires you to go cook and share with others, please do so. Because cook, if you can cook and you share with others, you are goddess's gift to the rest of us. I don't really cook much. I'm an indifferent cook at best because I'm indifferent to it. I just happen to love eating and oh, the food. So we get there and homemade bruschetta to start. And then there was crab-filled mushroom caps. And the salad was raspberry and feta on spinach with some kind of dressing that went beautifully with it. Then we actually started with a crab bisque. And after the crab bisque, what did we have? Beef tenderloin rouladen, I think it's called, where they roll it up with, and there was some crab and some other things rolled up into the beef, which was fabulous. Risotto and carrots, which was kind of funny because the carrots were absolutely plain and fabulous. It was so good. And I have to say that the raspberry cranberry martinis weren't so bad either. I wasn't driving, my brother picked me up. And then for dessert, I'd asked my brother to bring a Dairy Queen ice cream cake, which I rarely have, but oh, it was so tasty. And my sister, being my sister, also made pumpkin brulee, which was to die for. And she didn't have any that night because she'd spent all the day cooking, and her husband ate hers before she got up the next day. So she got royally screwed that time, but that's her own fault for not eating it at the time. Anyhow, if you cook, and this inspires you or something, go cook for other people. They'd love you for it. And if they don't love you for it, slap them up the side of the head and you know, give them a little shake or something, or I will, because you should always appreciate the people who are fabulous cooks in your lives. Okay, you should appreciate the people who are fabulous at whatever appeals to you in life. But for me, that was food. And then Saturday was since I can't do anything, there was no big, you know, go out and try curling for my 40th birthday or go for a long hike or, well, anything that involved me moving or doing anything energetic because I still move like a 70-year-old. Like I said, things are coming back slowly. And so it was invite people over here because, well, let's just say that at a previous party, I had that I threw actually in this apartment, and I got very, very drunk at, for anyone who's been in the SCA, which is the Society for Creative Anachronism, and has heard of Tablero, you may picture the state that I was in that particular year. This is not this year. And I got so inebriated that I had to go to bed at my own party, and I crawled into bed with everyone's jackets still piled on top of me. I didn't care. It was flat. It didn't move. It was all good. And my pride for that night, and I still a lot of pride for this, is that the party kept going for about 2 or 3 hours after I crawled into bed. And people were so sweet, and they'd pick up their coats and they'd wish me a good night and thank me for the party. It was very funny, all things considered. And I didn't actually learn from that experience about playing Tablero, which is a drinking game. And we played it again this year, but only once, so I didn't have to go to bed before people left. But let's just say that that was pretty much the end of the drinking, and I was still drunk at 5 in the morning. It was pretty impressive in its own way. So I had a bunch of people over, had big celebrations, and there's no purpose for me telling you that aside from go out, have fun, live life, and that was my update on my life. So that is, I think, going to do it for this little intro segment. Okay, not so little. You know me, I babble, and I'm good at it. I think. Oh my God. Sudden insecurity over my babbling skills. It has been too long since I've done this. It's one of those things where when you don't do things for a long time and you go to pick it up again, it's like jitters, like you did back when you were first doing it. Okay, not that bad because I'm a little too tired for that many jitters, but it's kind of hard, like back when it was when you're first starting out. I've been doing this for a year. I should find this easier. But well, such is life. For anyone who's ever gone through something like this, hugest sympathies on the planet. So we're going to take a break now, come back for the main segment, which is going to be on transformative mysteries. And the only thing I can say about the upcoming music is that it's going to be Arrogant Worms because I really wanted Arrogant Worms again. And you know, it's I want to say that I've tried more than once to get a hold of them because I'd like to actually have permission from the artists whenever possible to play their music. And I've never heard back from them. It's so frustrating. And so while I don't have permission to do it, I know that they post their full songs online and they do songs on YouTube once a month. And I can only hope that they would appreciate the promotion. And if they ever find out about this, well, you know what? Answer your emails. And then we wouldn't have had this problem. So that'll have to do. We're heading into some Arrogant Worms of a title as yet unknown.
Well, me and my buddies, we've got us some beer and a great big bottle of rye, and boxes of ammo and guns go with the man, good old Charlie's glass eye. Well, we look all around and we see all the nature so calm and so serene, but not for long, because we're going to use guns to make furry animals scream. Cause we're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. We're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. Well, up we go, our guns are loaded, and so's are we. We weave through the bushes and falls on our faces and piss on the nice trees. And then we spot something moving in a rust, and we pump it all of lead. And we smile real wide, and we hear it scream and thud as it falls down dead. Cause we're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. We're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. Well, up we go to see what we killed and watch the damn thing bleed. The first thing we see is a bright orange cap, we shot down old Charlie. But he don't seem to mind, he smiled all the time, he died real happy. But next time he should tell us when he's going off to take a pee. Cause we're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. We're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. Well, the sun goes down, we head back to town and hop in our pickup truck. Strap truck to the hood, start the engine, try it home with any luck. Well, what do you know, we run to a pole, but we're all still in one piece. And we get a free ride back into town, courtesy of the police.
Cause we're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids. We're going hunting, we're gonna kill something, I don't care what it is. Maybe a raccoon, maybe a gopher, maybe the neighbor's kids.
Yahoo! Yahoo!
If
haven't heard of me, I wouldn't be surprised. I bet you know my relatives, their names will never die. My mother is a saint, and my brother is a god. But all I am is Jesus' brother Bob.
Jesus' brother Bob, Jesus' brother Bob. A nobody relative of the Son of God. If only I'd been born just a little sooner, I'd be more than the brother of God Jr.
I have to pay the ferry to cross the Galilee, but not my brother.
No, not him.
He walks across for free. I finally get to work about a quarter after nine. Already he's turning water into wine.
Jesus, brother Bob. Jesus, brother Bob. A nobody relative of the Son of God. If only I'd been born just a little sooner, I'd be more than the brother of God Jr.
One day when I was home, I heard a mighty roar. There were 1,000 people right outside the door.
Help us, Jesus, help us!
Came the cheering from the mob. Then they got a look at me.
Oh, that's his only Bob. Jesus, brother Bob. Jesus, brother Bob. A nobody relative of the Son of God. If only I'd been born just a little sooner, I'd be more than the brother of God Jr.
He died upon the cross. I thought that I was free. Finally, people would get to know me for me.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. This was my big chance to finally get ahead. The next thing you know, he's rising from the dead.
Jesus, brother Bob. Jesus, brother Bob. A nobody relative of the Son of God. If only I'd been born just a little sooner, I'd be more than the brother of God Jr.
Everyone!
Jesus, brother Bob. Jesus, brother Bob. A nobody relative of the Son of God. If only I'd been born just a little sooner, I'd be more than the brother of God Jr.
And that was Goin' Huntin' and Jesus' Brother Bob from the Arrogant Worms' first album, The Arrogant Worms. And now we're going to slip into something completely different. And I want to invite you, I guess, for anyone who's been in ritual, and I'm assuming pagan ritual, but this actually kind of works for Catholic Mass in an interesting kind of way. So in ritual, and the cake and wine has been passed around. And for a lot of people, it's passed with a may you never thirst when the wine is passed from one person to another, or blessed be, sometimes thou art goddess as the cup is passed, or thou art God, depending on whether you're male or female, or obviously male or obviously female. And then there's the phrase that around here we typically only hear from a lovely gentleman who is a gardenerian trained, and he's a special man, we'll just leave it at that. And he will pass the wine to you and go, would you partake of this transformative mystery? Which I picked up and drove my friends and coven mates crazy with, because I used it all the time, and it apparently grates on people's nerves if you use it that regularly. So these are all different blessings that we give when we pass wine from hand to hand during ritual, or at least very typical Wiccan style rituals. There's also the food and passing of it, and, you know, may you never hunger, blessed be, the thou art God or goddess can still apply, as does the would you partake of this transformative mystery. And that got me thinking. Okay, that didn't get me thinking about transformative mysteries. The mead bubbling upstairs in the loft got me thinking about transformative mysteries. But the ritual seemed a more appropriate intro to the subject than the mead. So now that we've kind of got the question raised of this transformative mystery that comes up in ritual, I'm going to back up and take the conversation around over to the mead bubbling in my loft, and we'll come back to the component within ritual, we hope. So, yes, I have mead bubbling upstairs. For anyone who's not familiar, mead is a honey wine. Instead of being based off of grapes, it is based off of honey. It is ambrosia, food of the gods, depending on your viewpoint, but I happen to adore mead. And you can't just go out and buy it at your local liquor store unless you have a much cooler local liquor store. That's a tongue twister, local liquor store, than what I happen to have here. And while I know people who make mead and that I can buy bottles off of, for many in the world, it is something that is not so easily obtained. So for years, I've simply enjoyed it. And then this past year, I had made a promise to myself. I usually try and do one new thing a year, learn something new, do something new, something that I have always kind of wanted to do or has recently caught my attention. And ideally, it's either something of a crafty-ish nature, and that can be taken in either way, or something that makes me feel spiritual. In this case, it kind of covers all three bases, which is fabulous. And that is the making of mead. It turns out it doesn't require a whole heck of a lot. It requires a carboy, an airlock, some basic ingredients, including honey, and kind of a bucket to first mix it in. Anyway, not a lot of stuff is actually required. And if you want the basics on how to get started, email me at penniesinthewell@gmail.com. And I will happily give you what little knowledge that I happen to have gained from a lady who has much more knowledge than I do, who is Sarah at Hedgefolktales, hedgefolktales.com. More in her aspect, of course, as the Witch of Forest Grove, also.com. If you want to get a hold of her directly and ask her about wonderful mead making type things. So anyhow, this past year, so in about late October, November, and through last year, I learned the different stages of making mead. So I've done technically all of the stages, except for if I have to kill a mead. I've never actually done that, but I have many local people who can help me if I have to do it. That's when the yeast won't die on its own, and you have to force the death. So I got them all started, and they are cheerfully bubbling away upstairs, which is basically the yeast converting sugars to alcohol. Nom. And there came a point while through the agonizing section of life, well, actually, once I started recovering a bit, that I realized that the meads needed to get racked, which is just taking the liquid out, adding more honey if necessary, cleaning the original container and putting it all back in. And I had to get my lovely, fabulous friends, Holly and Tyson, to help me because the carboys, well, some of them were 2.5 gallons, and there was no way in hell I could even carry them downstairs, let alone manhandle and shake and do all the things necessary. So anyway, they helped me. The meads are doing fine. They're like my children. I have a rather sick and inappropriate attachment to them. And I will drink heartily of them when they are done, which suddenly I kind of feel like, what's Zeus's father's name? I want to say Uranus, but I have a feeling that's Roman and wrong, and I got nothing better at the moment. So Zeus's father, I kind of feel like him, the whole swallowing your children thing, but I'm going to go for it. But the funny part is, after this whole process, and I was having a little contemplative time in the bath, which was, well, I like contemplative time in the bath. What better time is there? There's warm water and soothing water, and I swear it helps the thinking process, and everything else is removed, and there you go. And I realized that I have almost an awe-like factor to this making of mead, that upstairs in my home, alcohol is being created. I'm making alcohol. Well, I'm not, but I created the environment necessary for it to happen. And without me, it wouldn't happen. So I'm involved, but it's actually the yeast making the alcohol. But still, there's this whole process that's going on and alcohol is being created. One thing is being transformed into something quite different, related, but different, because honey is not alcohol. Even mead type alcohol. Honey and alcohol, two very different things. And yet there is this process that I am doing and it's changing it. Suddenly I'm realizing yeast is the source of much transformation. Anyhow, to me, it is remarkably magical and in essence a sacred act by encouraging and providing a space for this transformation to take place with, going to back up ever so slightly. Well, not back up, but move sideways. For years, I've done baking. I've done baking since God knows when. You know, Mom used to bake the bread and my brother and sister made the cookies. I was more of the queen of muffins and I still make a damn fine muffin, let me just say. So I've baked for a really long time and baking is also very much a transformative mystery. You are taking a bunch of separate items and combining them together and creating something that is in many ways wholly new. It has reflections back to the original ingredients, but you take them, you combine them, you apply heat, and what you get afterwards isn't just the things kind of mixed up and jumbled together warmer. They are a new substance. They're bread or cookies or muffins, and it is the process of changing from one to another that is, of course, the transformative mystery. For some reason, the bread changing just never struck me as particularly interesting or magical. It's just highly mundane. You know, we've been doing that for freaking forever. I've watched it done. I've done it. Because it had such familiarity to me, it had no magical oomph for me emotionally, as opposed to the mead, which is brand new, and the experience of the transformation, it just seems so special and unique that I get all emotionally giddy over the fact of it, which doesn't really seem to be fair to the poor bread, because the bread is working not as hard, because it only, you know, takes half an hour to an hour, and the mead takes months and months, and maybe that's a component of it too, but it's still a transformative mystery. And coming back, so this is where my basis of my awe of it is from. And then from there, I skipped back over to in ritual. And a lot of times as we're passing the or at least I find when I'm having the sharing of the wines and cake in ritual, it is a sharing and it is a community moment, but it hasn't felt transformative necessarily. Like, what is being transformed? How is it being transformed? Am I part of what's being transformed? And I would suggest that the item, the cake and ale itself, depending on what's actually being shared, has itself been transformed from one thing to another, and as such carries an essence within it that encourages change in others. Alcohol is a very obvious one for this, given that if you imbibe alcohol, your perspective is transformed. Now, we normally think of this as not necessarily either as a generally kind of fun thing or for the overindulged, a potentially really bad thing, but it has that, you know, it's fun and silly or bad for your health. But the fact is that it is an intoxicant that can change your viewpoint on the world. And how, not the how if it does it, but the impact of that resides within you as to how you use it. So if you use it to, if you use the transformed viewpoint to explore further things on yourself, to test boundaries, magically, like there's a bunch of things that you can do that I'm not going to suggest at this point, but there are things that you can do magically with intoxication. So it literally can transform you. The bread, of course, and the ale as well, or the cakes and ale, both have the nutritive, is that a word, qualities. So they both feed you, and they give you energy in the form of food and drink. And these are transformed within your body to help you live on. If you don't get food and drink, you don't live all that particularly long. You can live, what is it, 3 days without water, a week to 10 days, 14 days without food, something like that. On that really depressing note, obviously food, drink, liquid, these things are necessary for our survival. And we take in these solid, in the cake's case, items. We take them into ourselves and we transform them into fuel for our body. So there too lies a transformative mystery. And you could say that cake and ale, you know, homemade or intently made for magical purposes, would have more oomph. But let's also take it a step farther and wander over for a second into the Catholic realm, because it's the Catholics who do the Eucharist, which is the wafer and the wine. So it's the blood, the wine is the blood of Christ, and the wafer is the body of Christ. And as a side note on this one, I read somewhere, and I was not smart enough to look it up beforehand, but anyhow, I read somewhere some while ago that the phrase hocus pocus, which should be familiar to all the witchy types out there and the non-witchy types, it's one of those classic, you know, phrases that witches use or are used in conjunction with witches, like bibbidi bobbidi boo, which is from the Disney. But hocus pocus is actually very old. And the etymology? Is that the right word? Anyway, the origin of the phrase is believed to have come from the phrase hoc est corpus. So hocestcorpus, that's used in Latin mass, and where they say this is the body. Hoc est corpus is this is the body. And that some gentleman, some very many, many, many years ago, did a hoc est corpus, hocus pocus kind of phrase. So he mangled it a little to come up with hocus pocus. And it has that, therefore, connotation of, you know, you say a few words and you magically change something from what it is to something else. And with the added connotation for, well, at least it's, you kind of always had it for me, of not necessarily a lot of validity in the hocus pocus. It's just a bunch of hocus pocus. You know, it didn't necessarily have, I want to say a really long word, and I'm going to fail, so we're going to skip it and just go that it had worth or integrity in and of itself. So this idea is also within the Catholic Mass, that you are taking the wine and you are taking the cake and you are transforming it into the essence of their, well, in essence of one of their deities. And when we do the wine from a Wiccan perspective, it is charged as if it was symbolic great rite, typically. In other words, the sacred generative act between the god and the goddess. So sex, in other words. And that act, when the god and goddess combine in that way, that you have the generation of the life force of the universe kind of deal. So on a good wine blessing is symbolic of their act, but generates an aspect of the same energy into the wine itself. And thus the wine becomes a carrier of the energy that the god and goddess bring to it with their union. So, woohoo! A lot of very generative energy in it. The cakes don't have that same kind of tradition of where it's related to another ritual in any sense in the Wiccan practice, but the blessing of it, I don't know, I always take it as connecting us with the earth in an additional way. But I guess you could say it's also connecting us with deity in another level. So in transformed, there's another level of transformation there that happens, of taking the wine and the cake, and that it's not just transformative by the act of its existence, but then transformed again by our magic into being a vessel of energy from the god and goddess that we can take into ourselves, and through the physical process of transmutation, of absorbing the cake and the ale into our body, we also absorb the magical essence that has been put into it. And then the question becomes, of that nature, all this transformative nature has gone on. And this is where I come back to the Gardnerian's question of, would you partake of this transformative mystery? If you think about all the weight that has gone into potentially that cake or that ale, and you hold it before you, are you willing to take into yourself all of the power and weight of that transformation, and to make it a part of you, and willingly transform a part of yourself through this process? To take in something that will transform you and change you, even if it's on a small and relatively unknown level up front, but could potentially have impact down the road. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to transform? And I wonder if maybe that's the heart of the transformative mystery in the end, or at least a part of it. Perhaps that's the part that opens the door to experiencing the transformative mystery, is recognizing all that it is. And with that recognition, deciding if you are willing or not to take the leap. So I'm going to leave it at that as the main topic for the day. If you have questions or comments, I'd love to hear comments about it. Feel free, email me, penniesinthewell@gmail.com. And we are now going to take our second break here from one of the podkin and find out what has brought the show to you today. Hold on. Episode 22 of Pennies in the Well is brought to you by the Moon tarot card. And what do we have for a rune today? What is our magical rune? Ingvar. That's going to be a good time.
Of Appalachian Witch Doctor Tales. If you like a little history and even a little science mixed in with your spiritual and magical practices, I have the podcast for you. Sure, it may seem a little odd at first, dispelling modern medical myths while discussing subjects such as Appalachian ghost stories and candle magic, but for this doctor by day, witch by night, it's the perfect fit. So go ahead, slip on your hiking boots, don your pointy hat, and dig out that old blood pressure cuff so you can join me for this pagan podcast. You can find me at appalachianwitchdoctor.podbean.com or by searching for Appalachian Witch Doctor Tales on iTunes. I hope to see you soon, and until then, bright blessings.
And welcome back to episode 22 of Pennies in the Well. So we're just going to finish off with the contest that we had going, and I'm actually going to grab that book so I can give you the actual title, and now I have to yell at you from a distance because you can't hear me properly because I'm not in front of you, and I'm back. So this is for The Fairy's Guide to Green Magic from the Garden, and nope, nothing to fear here, just a little tipping of the old snowball microphone, you know, that thing. So anyhow, we are finally going to have that contest, which got extended, and I got a few entries for it. So first off, I'm going to actually draw the name so that those of you who want to stop listening can, and the rest of you can just simply enjoy through the shadow of pain of not having won such a wonderful book, what people had to say, because I mean, I'm going to read some of what was put into the contest entry. So anyway, I have my little container. I have my names, and the winner is Robin. So, Robin, I will be emailing you later, probably today, and letting you know that you are the contest winner. Now, for the contest, people had to say, and you think that I would remember this, but it was about how they experience the divine in nature, I think was what I had asked. And I'm going to read you what people had to say, because I think it's something that is lovely to share. So, and if your entry is not listed amongst the ones that I read, what this says is that you did not follow the directions and put contest entry into the header line and email me at panniesinthewell@gmail.com, because I am a victim of my own organization, which means I can only follow it for the precise amount that... So when it fit both those criteria, I got it and could find it. And if it didn't, then I didn't find it. And the sadness is mine, but the loss is yours. Anyhow, so here are some of the things people had to say about how they experience magic in nature. So Jeremy says, the wind makes me feel magical. Walking or even standing with it blowing on me, I can just feel the power. For a Sag Cap cusp, it is pretty weird for air to do that, but hey, I am weird. I don't think you're that weird. I adore the power of the wind, and if anyone has seen me on Twitter in the last couple of days, there was a massive storm going. We've had a lot of rain, heavy rain. I mean, we get rain a lot. It's Vancouver, British Columbia. We're in a rainforest. It's what we do. We do really good at rain. Bad at everything else. Fabulous at rain. But lately it's been like torrential downpour, thudding, heavy rain. It's fabulous. The type where if you were outside in it, you would feel it pounding on your skin, almost like a little mini massage from Mother Nature. And we also had a lot of wind storms in the last couple of months, and last night even a bit of thunder. There is such power in the wind, and it comes from such distant places that... It has a changeability and a connection to elsewhere that is very magical. I agree. In other words, I agree with you. I probably agree with everybody, because I think nature is just magical in so many ways. But hey, so Hannah had to say, she goes, she's been thinking long and hard about her answer and finally came up with one. Now, she says, I'm sorry if this is a tad confusing, as I live in Sydney, Australia, and obviously my surroundings will be different than yours, so I apologize in advance if my answer does not make sense. Well, hey, if it makes sense from your world. Anyhow, her answer. For me, the most magical part of nature isn't a single thing within the great expanse of our world, but a moment I am sometimes lucky enough to experience. And this moment for me is the most magical part of nature. When there is a full moon and I happen to be holidaying near a little bay that I've been going to since I was a very young child, I will go to the water once the moon has risen, because I want to be able to watch the trees. At this particular bay, there's a small grove of tall, noble gum trees at one end of the beach, and in the full moonlight, they stand proud and pale-looking for all the world like a group of white spirits or spooky ghosts. What completes this magical experience is the quiet lapping of the waves on the shore and the gently glittering reflection on the ocean. In that single moment, I truly believe that magic and the divine is in all living things and can be found as a special, sometimes obtainable moment in nature. I think that's a fabulous answer, and doesn't matter that we're worlds away from each other. Okay, half a world away. I shouldn't take so far into the hyperbole land. Anyhow, that makes perfect and wonderful sense. And since apparently I'm relating to the various ways that I feel magic in nature, there are three aspects of that. One, I go moon crazy when I see her a lot of the time. And the moon itself is one fabulous source. The way that you've combined it, and I think the childhood aspect shouldn't be underestimated. There is a creek near my home where I was growing up inside of a canyon. I wasn't growing up in the canyon, the creek's inside the canyon. And it is a place I still go to. I even visited a very accessible part of it yesterday. as part of my birthday, just getting outside and a little touch of nature. Normally I go to a part that's very inaccessible and requires climbing in the proper shoes and potentially a lot of dirt on your jeans. And there's something about going back to this place that was magical for me as a child. It's almost like it makes it easier to be magical now. Kind of like if you could retain how you felt about Santa Claus as a young child, as an adult. And that feeling of awe and magic in nature, I think, is very easy to translate over from childhood to adulthood. Yes, these are just my rambling thoughts. I'm not saying that these are true statements about your experience. This is just how I'm relating to your experience. And I want to also share one other one. The description of the trees and the water made me remember this one time up at Chilliwack River. We went for a walk. I was with a couple of friends at the time, and we were off the standard beaten path and wandering up along the river and away from the river periodically and back to it. And we came back to it at one point where it had obviously changed its course and somewhere further up from where we were. And the river had shifted and gone through a section of forest. And sometime previous to us being there, this was not a brand new thing. And you had essentially a drowned forest. I mean, it was only half drowned because the water only went up like a meter or 2 meters up the trees. But you had all these trees and they were white skeletons standing amongst this raging river. And it was the most dramatic, tragic, gorgeous thing I have seen, or at least one of them. It was amazing. And God, how I wish I had a camera, because when I went looking for it a year or two later, the path had shifted again and the trees, living trees, were coming back and the old trees were falling down, and it just wasn't quite the same. I mean, bad as it was for the forest as something to experience, it was intense, man. It was really intense, particularly for that idea of life and death. And I have really, really gone on a tangent from your entry. So Robin's entry, our winning entry, as it is, she says, because you can't tell with some names, he's and she's. So whichever one you are is the one I meant. Yeah, really. You can't prove it, but it's true. Says that I am very fortunate that I live in a rural area. Yeah, there are other homes around us, but with 25 acres to meander on. Lucky wench. Or bastard, or whatever. Not that I'd ever insult you, but still, 25 acres to meander on? That's awesome. Anyway, we hardly even know there are other people around us. In this sense, I find that just coming home from work, I work in the big city, makes me feel my most magical. The clean scent of the air, the quietness of the surroundings. We have so many trees in our yard that wave at us when we arrive and when we leave. The squirrels that run by chittering, and at night the stars. The stars that city folk do not get to see because of all of the lights in town. We also raise cows that are tame and friendly. Some love to have their necks scratched, and I can walk over to the gate and get some animal conversation time. We also have a water garden with pond and goldfish. There also seems to be a few mischievous spirits that hang around the water garden under the bridge. I guess that what I'm saying is that I don't have any one aspect of nature other than home. And yes, I'm a Cancerian. Apparently there was a lot about signs going on in these. Oh, that sounds absolutely fabulous. I don't know about the rest of you out there, but I know I'm sitting here going, I wish I had that to come home to. I mean, sure, I try with my balcony and a few plants on it that I don't kill because I'm pretty good at that. And they don't get a lot of light given the northwest facing. Anyway, I'm making excuses and digressing and mumbling, so we will quit that. But it is absolutely lovely that you get to come home into nature. And I think some people are lucky enough to have that, and some of us have to find ways of kind of making that happen. With a little bit more effort, like staging things on a balcony or making the effort to go out into nature. But that is beautiful and lovely. And I do believe I'm a little jealous, but I'm okay with that. So Holly says, I love being with deity when my heart is open and I can truly listen to the spaces in between. Oh, wrong contest entry. Huh, my bad. Oops. Yeah, sorry. Some things happen that way. Moving on is the last one we have is from Paul. And Paul says, I love the liminal spaces where the elements meet. Any places where three elements such as air, water, earth meet are special. Riverbanks, coastlines, and lakes, for example. All four elements together are sacred. A bonfire on a beach at night is perfect. A volcano erupting in the darkness is magnificent, with rivers of molten lava plunging into the sea. Hawaii is Kauai, although this one is best viewed from a distance. Oh, that must be the name of the volcano. An electric storm lighting up the night sky. Turn off all the noisy distractions and watch the magic at work. Oh, hell yeah, I agree with that. And we are the fifth element, the quintessence that exists only for the blink of an eye in deep time, and we see the rainbows, the sunsets, the storms, and we know the transient yet eternal beauty of nature. That is what we are. Which is a lovely way, I think, to end this show. So that is the note that I will leave you on. Of course, you can find me, email me at penniesinthewell@gmail.com, find me on Facebook as Saturn Dark Hope. The website is www.penniesinthewell.com, and I'm sure there's other ways to get a hold of me, but for the moment, I think I will just, after this long rambling and probably needs a lot of work to get up to my usual standards, but give me time, I'm still in recovery. I'm just going to close off the show with deep and wild blessings to you. Blessed be. Ha! I bet you thought this show was over. Well, kind of so did I, but then I realized that there were two announcements that I intended to make and that had kind of completely skipped my mind. But my mind is kind of like Swiss cheese a little still. Well, maybe not fully Swiss, but something with still holes in it, just not as massive holes as Swiss cheese. And I'm working on that, but I'm not there yet. So anyhow, there are two announcements that I would like to make. One is for Misanthrope Press, and you've probably heard it on a couple of other podcasts, and I've mentioned it before. They are doing a pagan anthology called Etched Offering, Stories from the Cauldron. It's a pagan anthology, and they got story submissions, but a lot of them were not so pagan-y. So they have extended their deadline till April 30th, 2011. So you still have about 6 weeks to get in that story, your story submission to them for that anthology. They would love to hear from you. And just as a kind of side note, Chris from Infinite and the Beyond is doing the cover art, and Corey from New World Witchery has a story already accepted to it. So apparently, if your name starts with C, you've got a serious in with this game. And if not, you have to take your chances like the rest of us. And I think I'll be putting something in as well. So join me and get in your story submissions to this lovely lady who would have been reminding me, because I said that I am a little, you know, sketchy these days for remembering things. And she had to remind me if I forgot to put it in my next show. I got so close. I had actually started to change the file over to an MP3 before I realized that I had failed to put this in. Anyhow, the other announcement I wanted to make is that Peter, I think Dybing, of the Covenant of the Goddess, I'm pretty sure it's Covenant of the Goddess, COG, has set up a donation site for donations to go to Doctors Without Borders for relief in Japan. I'm putting a link to the site in the show notes, which of course are on penniesinthewell.com, and you can donate there as a pagan to support them. They've raised about $15,000 already of the $30,000 they were looking for. So that is a great way to donate to help the situation in Japan and also do it from a pagan perspective. So that's pretty cool. Thank you, Peter, for setting that up. Also, on a side note or a related note to that, the Proud Pagan podcasters, I'm not sure if they're going to be collecting directly or just collecting from podcasters to send over there, but they've also been talking about supporting that initiative, so that's pretty cool. And now that will end episode 22 of Pennies in the Well. I hope you enjoy. And you know what? Maybe after all, I was thinking I wasn't going to do it, but let's take this this out with another Arrogant Worm song. Now we just kind of have to figure out what we want. I'm thinking The Last Saskatchewan Pirate. I couldn't tell you right now if I've played it for you before. If I have, skip to the end. Don't listen to it. Heck, if you don't want to listen to it, you just skip to the end anyways. And if you do want to listen to it, regardless of how many times you've heard it before or sung it yourself, because it can be really fun at festivals, enjoy and have an absolutely fabulous week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or however long it takes me to get to my next episode. Hopefully it won't be as long as the last time. But, you know, life has no guarantees except that you get to live it till you die. So on that note, farewell, take care, and blessed be.
I used to be a farmer and I made a living fine. I had a little stretch of land along the CP line. But times went by and though I tried, the money wasn't there. And bankers came and took my land and told me fair is fair. I looked for every kind of job, the answer always no. Hire you now, they'd always laugh, we just let 20 go. The government, they promised me a measly little sum. But I've got too much pride to end up just another bum. Then I thought, who gives a damn if all the jobs are gone? I'm gonna be a pirate on the River Saskatchewan. 'Cause it's a heave-ho, hi-ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. It's a ho, hey, hi, hey, farmers bar your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. Well, you'd think the local farmers would know that I'm at large, but just the other day I found an unprotected barge. I snuck up right behind them and they were none the wiser. I rammed their ship and sank it and I stole their fertilizer. A bridge outside of Moose Jaw spans a mighty river. Farmers cross in so much fear their stomachs are a quiver, 'cause they know that Tractor Jack is hiding in the bay. I'll jump the bridge and knock them cold and sail off with their hay. 'Cause it's a hee-ho, hi-ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. It's a ho, hey, hi, hey, farmers bar your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. Well, Mountie Bob, he chased me, he was always at my throat. He'd follow on the shoreline, but he didn't own a boat. But cutbacks were a-coming, so the Mountie lost his job. So now he's sailing with me, and we call him Salty Bob. A swinging sword, a skull and bones, and pleasant company. I never pay my income tax and screw the GST.
Screw it!
It's Albert down to Saskatoon, the terror of the sea. If you wanna reach the co-op, boy, you gotta get by me. 'Cause it's a heave-ho, hi-ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat, barley, and all the other grains. It's a ho, hey, hi, hey, farmers bar your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores.
Arr, matey! Get it? Matey?
Oh, hey, hey, that's really funny. You know, like Louis Riel?
Well, pirate life's appealing, but you don't just find it here. I've heard that in Alberta, there's a band of buccaneers. They roam the Athabasca from Smith to Fort McKay, and you're gonna lose your Stetson if you have to pass their way. Well, winter is a-coming, and a chill is in the breeze. My pirate days are over once the river starts to freeze. I'll be back in springtime, but now I have to go. I hear there's lots of plundering down in New Mexico. 'Cause it's a heave-ho, hi-ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. It's a ho, hey, hi, hey, farmers bar your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. It's a heave-ho, hi-ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. It's a ho, hey, hi, hey, farmers bar your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. When you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shore.